The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist.
You're listening to Radio Aryan.
Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor of Russian and Ukrainian history and philosophy, an Orthodox priest, and a theorist of nationalism and agrarianism. And now, here's Matt.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. Tonight, I am doing a show on Junon, René Junon, and this is really the result of a request, and actually several requests over the last year or so, that I deal with his metaphysics and approach to science. For me, Junon was very important early on in my development because of his battle against nominalism. If there is a single metaphysical idea that I have dedicated my life's work to, it is that the greatest evil and the greatest destructive force in terms of thought is nominalism. Nominalism is, at its most simple, the idea that there is no intrinsic connection among objects in classes of things. We classify different species, for example, different forms of moral action, and we give them a label. That label is just a matter of convenience. There is no intrinsic connection, for example, within the different species of feline. It's just that they look alike, and so we give them a general term, a nominal term, like Persian or Siamese. The idea is that the only thing that exists in the world is the individual. It's the case in science. It's the case in political theory. Systems of individuals are not intrinsic. They're accidental. And we put a label on them. But the label is the only reality. We largely impose our labels on classes of things. The implications of that are overwhelming. And I've come to the opinion that nominalism, at least in the realm of thought, is the origin of all evil. It's to say that within nature or human society, there are no intrinsic universal concepts. Those concepts are simple labels. That means that there is no intrinsic relation among individuals, individual things that we see and feel and act upon every day of our life. It's only the human mind that is designed to seek order in the chaos that confronts it. And that order is arbitrary and is based on the words that we may give to things. You know, dog, human being, good, wicked, pious, these words don't really adhere to anything except that we've gotten used to the notion of calling all objects that look somewhat alike by the same name. And that's arbitrary from the human point of view. This is why Junon is so important. When you make the claim that the individual alone exists, you're making the claim from a political point of view, an ethical point of view, that there is no community. There is no solidarity. These things are accidental to what it is to be a human being. The opposite of nominalism in the early Middle Ages is called realism. That derives from Plato and his school that hold individuals exist only because they are part of a broader reality. In other words, you have all human beings together in one room. They actually are individuals secondarily. Primarily, they are human beings. And there is a nature of humanity that exists apart from any specific human being. And of course, the Orthodox point of view, this is extremely common. And it is the grounding of the concept of logos. Logos is the second person of the Trinity. It is Christ considered as God, not as man, but Christ considered as God is the unity and synthesis of all of these objective forms. Siamese, human beings, good actions, that the form would exist even without those individuals. Individuals are only individuals because they partake of something else greater than themselves. So you could see how the nominalist idea, which is the hallmark of the modern world, is completely destructive. We could say, for example, that an individual only becomes such because he is born in a certain community, in a certain family. He isn't just an individual. That individualism is so intensely fenced about with the eternal forms of natural items, such as families and ecosystems. The individual is secondary. But the more significant concept is that the form, the universal, is something that exists independent from, but is manifested within, individuals. So there are intrinsic connections in nature. The nominalist says there are no intrinsic connections. We put labels on things to bring order out of chaos. And for the most part, those labels, they may be useful, but they are not essential. They're just words that we apply to a class of thing. There is no reason to believe that all classes or the classes of an object are somehow closely related. They're not. It's just a matter of use. It's easier to refer to all human beings as human beings. There is no essential human nature, however. And that's the difference between nominalism and realism. Realism does posit the existence of a universal human nature that is manifest in Logos, in the second person of the Trinity, and that there are intrinsic connections between all the forms of the natural world, forming a single law-bound, law-abiding cosmos, which in formal terms is Logos, or Christ as God, the expression of the Father, the logic of the Father, the thought of the Father. The Trinity is proven logically by the simple fact that God the Father, the origin, the creator of all, has thoughts. Those thoughts must also be infinite and divine, and that's where you deduce the second person of the Trinity. It is logical. It is the logical unpacking of the idea of God the Father. Anyway, I want to start here with three major concepts in Junon's thought. At one time or another, I've read all of his works and I've lectured on him in the past. And he is, at least in contemporary academia, for the most part, is completely ignored. He's simply too much for the academic establishment to deal with. And the nominalist issue is at the center of everything. I want you to think through this concept. The difference between this pure random individualism and the existence of objectively real, hence the word realism, categories that exist in God's mind via logos. This is the battle. The battle is between those like Junon, who are Platonic realists. He was not a Christian, but he deeply respected the Orthodox Greek, in particular, approach to the world. Junon is a metaphysician. I'm not dealing with him as a religious figure because he approaches religion solely from the point of view of epistemology. I mean, we could talk about logos as this formal concept of all the natures of objects and things that exist in the world in their perfect harmony. That is logos. It's approaching Christianity strictly from the point of view of epistemology, not in terms of its revelation or sacraments or everything else. So we're talking about Christ as God and as the ultimate principle of metaphysics and science. The three concepts I want to deal with Junon is probably his three most famous: science, rationalism, and tradition. I did my doctoral dissertation in 99 on the epistemology and ontology of Michael Oakeshott, and he is one of the great, albeit later, expressions of the sort of neo-Hegelian British idealist movement. And I think there's a lot of similarities between Junon and Oakeshott, especially given the situation. My dissertation was on the relationship between nominal modern science and the force and violence that has to be used to impose that on a society. In other words, modern nominalism is at the root of tyranny in the modern world. So, science. For Junon, it is always relative. It is never fundamental. science can talk about secondary issues and questions, it is incapable in and of itself of dealing with primary cases and situations. That is logic, that is axiomatic, not the sort of experimental nominalist concept. The science is secondary in that it is parasitic on other sorts of knowledge, logical, metaphysical. Science is a problem because it deals only with appearances. The nominalist mind can only see appearances. It can only look at a human being and see that he has long hair, or is male, or is wearing sneakers. That's all the nominalist can see. There is no human nature manifest in this person. It is almost a random and arbitrary set of qualities, height, weight, color, hair, etc. But that's all science deals with. Science can only talk about cause and effect amongst the qualities of objects that we are faced with, strictly appearances. Therefore, science is very superficial. It has its uses, of course, but it is very superficial, literally, because it only deals with appearances. Positivism is somewhat of a close cousin to nominalism, and Junon sees it as absolutely absurd. And he sees it as absurd for this reason, one that I share very much, because the claim of the positivist movement, which is really, I mean, positivism is modern science in terms of its method. It claims that knowledge is possible without any ultimate first principles or ends of humanity. The minute you start saying that a scientific agenda within a bureaucratic scientific establishment has a certain set of ends, you want to cure disease, and it's good to cure disease because it's good that more people rather than fewer not be killed by this disease. That is an extra scientific end. All scientific questions ultimately have a moral ground, that it's good for us to know X rather than Y. That means that all scientific methods have to have these universal ends based on the essences of objects, the realist existence of actual universal things that exist in logos, in God's mind. Ultimately, the problem with positivism and science is that people in the modern world do not care about the truth of the matter. Most of the time, they flee from understanding the truth of the matter. No, the modern scientific establishment is based solely on technology, on the application of their knowledge, which allegedly will make our lives much easier. That may or may not be based on the truth of the relations amongst objects in the natural world. The fact is that facts, the way we use the word facts, these only have meaning within a broader theory. They do not exist separate from your basic approach to the world. And that basic approach is not scientific, because scientific methods themselves presuppose a logical set of concepts, the logic that we human beings adduce to things, which makes science something trustworthy. But those axioms, those first principles, are not scientific, and science cannot make them. Never confuse science proper with the present bureaucratic scientific establishment. Those are two very separate things. And when I have debated many of these positivist types, they refuse to make that distinction. The modern scientific establishment is science with a capital S, which of course is nonsense. Ultimately, Junon's idea is one that I share very much. Truth does not exist. It doesn't exist in the nominalist world. The nominalist world only sees the elite's ability to manipulate nature, including human nature, to get nature to do something that she normally would not do. You're forcing nature to do something, and that is the nature of technics. That is the nature of science. The old alchemical concept was, according to Junon, a concept of cosmic order. The real relations among things, even apart from their material manifestations. Modern chemistry, on the other hand, is really just about the materialism, profits, satisfying a certain overarching agenda, both intellectually and in terms of state, corporate America, whatever it is. Confusing science with the scientific establishment is a tremendous error. It's sort of like confusing ethical behavior with the Department of Philosophy at the University of North Dakota. or the philosophic establishment in universities in general. Those are two different things. Okay, the second concept is rationalism. And most of you know Michael Oakeshott's most famous work is an elongated essay called Rationalism and Politics. Now, Oakeshott is approaching this from a neo-Hegelian point of view, which I don't want to get into now. I guess you could order my dissertation. It's online somewhere. The concept is the rationalism fits together as the epistemology of positivism and nominalism. Rationalism is mechanism, the idea of reducing human beings and nature to a machine rather than an organism. The Enlightenment is based on, especially the early French Enlightenment, is based on the concept that nature is a machine. While, of course, the reaction to the old medieval concept was that nature is an organism. Two very different things. There's a difference between an organism and an organization. It's kind of like saying the U.S. Constitution contains a certain words and phrases that we may find agreeable, but the constitutional order itself is not written down on paper. It manifests the life of Americans at a certain place and time. There's a huge difference between the concept, the organism of things, and how they are manifest externally in terms of mechanized life. Rationalism rejects anything that is super individual. The problem with nominalism is that it's about modern power. If there are no intrinsic meanings in the natural order, including human nature, they claim that there are no intrinsic meanings. There is no intrinsic connections amongst natural objects, except that human beings give them this conception. That means the scientific establishment now has given itself the power to interpret all natural function and all natural ends. If there are no intrinsic relations among natural objects, what that means is then the scientific establishment can create those meanings and those relationships and those ends. And of course, they're going to do so from their own point of view and in their own interest. Unity in the rationalist and nominalist mind is impossible because the unity is part of the sort of supersensible relation among objects. But the super individual is something that objectively exists. The unity of human traditions, the Jungian archetypes, for example, symbols which are in common civilizations that probably had no contact with one another. It's one of Junon's major arguments is that natural law functions the same in all human societies. They have the same needs, the same desires. They're almost all based on the family and virtues that come with the family. In other words, the proof of natural law and the proof of realism against nominalism is that societies around the globe, not only in space but also in time, going back to the earliest records of mankind, have the family as the basic unit, usually the extended family. From that, there is deduced a whole bunch of virtues, you know, loyalty and solidarity and the headship of the man as the main protector of the family, etc. These exist in every society that has ever existed. There is no society that ever rewarded cowardice as somehow a virtue, or ignorance, stupidity, as somehow a virtue. These are things that are built into the very nature of the cosmos and of human relations, and we partake of that cosmos within logos, within the idea of the unity of created things as an immaterial formal quality, one that exists inherently, not one that is placed there by the scientific establishment. Nominalism is false because it can't make any sense out of the commonalities of universal metaphysical systems, of universal virtues which are protected in every society on the globe. Adultery is punished on every society that has ever existed. Adultery is considered a bad thing. Family is considered a good thing. Only in late modernity, and the absolute domination of the scientific establishment and technical control, only then do you see these natural institutions begin to fall apart, and in fact, the very denial that they're natural institutions in the first place. Nominalism hides behind the scientific bureaucracy, but it cannot make sense out of all of the formal connections amongst different peoples throughout the world, thousands of cultures that never had any contact one with another, and yet they all have a concept of God, they all have a concept of family, and hence things like adultery and faithfulness. They all have some kind of a military force, and they reward valor and bravery. They're all the same in that particular regard. Now, how these things are manifest day-to-day, that, of course, is going to change, and that's the basis of a nation, ethnic group. It's the same formal qualities, just they're organized a bit different language and different set of stresses and different sets of emphasis. But that's the proof that nominalism is false. The fact that the family, the tribe, the ethnic group, these are usually with a religious grounding, a cultic grounding, are the ultimate foundations of societies around the globe until the modern era, proves that these things are super sensible and super individual. The fact is, and this is Junon's brilliance, is the concept that truth does not exist in the nominal and positivistic world. Truth is truth because the scientific establishment or the state says it's true. And it's true because it's useful, and it's useful for one group of people over another. If you want to reduce truth to the ability to use something, utility, you've now destroyed the concept of truth and substituted in its place the fact that something may work for a certain end. Those ends usually are not yours. Those ends usually are in corporate America or the state or the military apparatus or whatever. Okay, that's half the show. We're going to continue on Junon when we come back, and we're going to hopefully be able to synthesize and make more sense out of all of this rather abstract material. Hang in there.
Don't go away, because there is more on the Orthodox Nationalist. This is VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. Let's return to the Orthodox Nationalist, hosted by Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. We're dealing today with somebody, by request, the metaphysics and epistemology of René Junon, and somebody who I've been asked to treat as much as I possibly know how many times over the last couple of years. And I think Junon has a tremendous hold over the mentality, the traditionalist and Platonic element that Junon has made the center of his metaphysics. And the big question here is the battle against nominalism. I mean, I'm trained in metaphysics and ontology at the doctoral level, but nominalism is something that more or less is enforced at the academic level. Nominalism, positivism, rationalism, essentially the same thing. There's some elements that do not overlap, but for our purposes, those three are the same thing. Now, the third element that I wanted to deal with, science, rationalism, the third element is tradition. This is now tradition with a capital T. He's using the word as a technical term, not as this vague kind of cultural conservatism that we talk about today. No, tradition is with a capital T. We finished the first half of the show by saying human societies have a tendency, no matter where they are or what period of time you find them in, develop the identical number of virtues. The family is always the center, often the extended family. The tribe is essentially the most extended family. It usually has a linguistic and a cultic basis. There's always the idea of God. There's always the idea of family, and hence the virtues and vices that revolve around that. Wherever you go, those things are held the highest esteem. Only in late modernity, only in our particular postmodern world, are those things under attack. And they're under attack because ultimately of the metaphysical system of nominalism, the idea that there are no intrinsic relations amongst objects or classes of objects in nature. It's all accidental, it's all random, and what the scientific establishment is supposed to do is take these facts about how things work and put them together in a view of the world that serves utility. That which is the most useful and expedient is the most true. And that's the problem. That's the problem all of us who are doing battle with modernity and the modern mind, ultimately we end up on these topics. But the ground, the logos, the ground of all of those virtues that adhere to all of those natural institutions, these taken together, that ground, that foundation, is what Junon means by tradition. It's that each society has a certain set of functions. These functions are intrinsic to what it is to be human. They're not later theoretical additions to our individuality. They serve to show us the source of individuality. Modern political theory, like Hobbes and Locke, one of the biggest problems with reading like people like Hobbes is that he's dealing the state of nature with isolated individuals who are so exhausted fighting each other that they create this ultimate overpowering state apparatus and everything that's associated with that. The problem is, and this is the case in Locke as well, is that they're dealing with fully formed, literate, intelligent adults. But that begs the question. They're just assuming that individuals pop up out of the ground, fully formed adults, all speaking the same language. It's a fraud. It's absurd. It's the height of absurdity. Where did these fully formed individuals come from? Of course, that's when the theory, the modern liberalism, modern conservatism, they start to fall apart. They fall apart because individuals have to be formed. But what forms them? Well, the only things are the family, the extended family, the tribe, the ethnic group, the religion. And Junon uses the word religion. Is one big disagreement I have with Junon is he uses the word religion in a very vague and generalistic way. You know, Buddhism is not a religion. I don't think Hinduism is either. These are poetic elements, very profound prophetic elements that describe and make sense out of our human life and the natural and social forces that work upon us in any given moment. It can't be enough that you take a metaphysical system and attach poetic elements to it and then claim it's a religion. That's not good enough. By that argument, I could claim that Plato was the founder of a certain religion because of the poetic elements, the myth of Ur and the cave and the ring of Gyges and all these other things. They have a certain poetic element to them. That in and of itself is not enough to create a religion. And Junon uses the word in a very general way. I think to call Buddhism or Taoism a religion is really to stretch the definition of the word to where it is almost unusable. But the good part of Junon's concept is that religions, however you want to define that term, have an awful lot in common. I have no difficulty whatsoever with that concept. Of course they do. That just proves that there is a universal human nature. This is the universal human nature that Christ took to himself, connected it with the divine, and then brought it through death. That meant that the form of humanity, human nature itself, was deified. The only way we could participate in it is within the church. But the fact is, all of these poetic, metaphysical, ontological, religious systems all have some concept of that at its root. Natural law creates and maintains these functions that any society needs to have. Every once in a while, I get some idiot writing me, and he says something like, I see in ancient Egyptian religion a lot of similarities to the mother of God, the divine child and all this. And I said, could it possibly be that all societies over the millennia have venerated the concept of motherhood? That is a perfectly natural reaction to the development of the family in ancient societies and even prior to ancient societies. They're similar because human nature is one and the same. I mean, I don't even think it's really interesting to say that religions, in that very broad sense, have a lot in common. That only makes sense to me because there is a single human nature, and therefore there is a single natural law. The family is always venerated. The ethnic group, in a very general sense, is always venerated. And all those virtues that keep the group together and functioning as a unit are venerated. That shows only that logos and the logos doctrine, in fact, is true. It is the harmonious connection of all the forms of objects in nature, including human nature, unified and brought under one concept, and that is God. Specifically, the second person in the Trinity, the thought of God, the wisdom of God, the action of God. Those things must also be God. The thought of God is automatically divine and infinite and containing everything. But there's definitely a difference between the mind that does the thinking and the actual content of the thought. The Trinity can very easily be logically deduced from that concept, that if God the Father is to act and to think, for example, that thought would, by definition, have to be divine, and hence the Logos doctrine was born. And of course, the Holy Spirit completes the circle, in essence, because, as St. John of Damascus would say, it is the force or the expression of the action of the Father. St. John of Damascus, in dealing with the Trinity, says this: consider your mind as the Father. It is the generation of all our thoughts and actions. But those thoughts and actions we can discuss and analyze as separate from the mind that created them. When I think a certain idea, and then because of that I get up and do it, whatever it is, those are two separate yet highly related things. Words, however, don't just have meanings. Words also have to be made sense out of in a society, in a discipline, like, you know, philosophy or history or plumbing. The words that we use all the time have to have an effect, an impact on us. And that is the realm of the Spirit. Hence, the Trinity is complete, logically deduced. This is central to the early church fathers of showing how the thought of God must itself be God, and therefore there must be a logos, where the thoughts of God, the ideas of God, exist in a single, tightly integrated concept, which is Christ, Christ as God. Now, Christ as man is just Christ as an individual person. Certain skin color, certain hair, certain feet. That's Christ as an individual that we can relate to as another individual. No, I'm talking about the divine side, from a purely philosophical point of view, is logos. The unity of all the thoughts of the Father, the so-called ideas in the Platonic system, unified together as a singular element. The full harmony of the cosmic ideas that then get manifest in creation. The problem with the fall of Adam is that Adam at one point was capable of seeing logos, God's presence in all of nature. Not identical to nature, but as the guiding internal principle, essence, light, wisdom, energy. It all means the same thing in metaphysical and religious terms. That is a single object, logos. That logos took humanity to itself. But the Holy Spirit came in the New Testament after Christ had ascended. It is the force of this unity of human and divine nature manifest in history. That is the church, and that is a specific function of the Holy Spirit. So we have our mind. It thinks about something. Then you speak it to somebody. It has a certain meaning. But that's not enough. You need someone to hear it. And they hear it, and those words take on a denotation, a connotation. All of those things that make a word striking to you, you could understand it within a context. That is the third element in this. Now, St. Augustine says something similar. He says that there is, in all the world, everything is divided up into three. There is the knower, there is the object known, and then there is the state of knowing that object. everything, all of our actions have a threefold nature. There is its origin, there is its activity, and the fact that that activity can be communicated to others, and other people can look at it and interpret it. There are always three things in how human beings function. There is always a source, there's always an action, and then there's always a context of understanding. All three of them have to exist at the same time. All three of them have to be functional relative to each other, or it's all nonsense. But the concept here, in terms of Junon, is the tradition is the historical and literary expression of these same concepts. No matter what society you go to, whether it be advanced or primitive or whatever it is, you have this specific set of virtues that usually get poeticized because it's giving up this poetic image, artistic applications, iconography, all that kind of stuff. And that simply means that you're taking these universal, real, existing universal forms and dressing them up in poetic imagery to make them much easier for the average person to grasp. The average person cannot read Plato and try to make sense out of his world in purely formal and logical terms. You know, only a handful of lunatics do that, like me. No, the point is that when we take those ideas, they have been attached to Christ's humanity. Because Christ was an individual speaking a certain language in a certain cultural context, the presence of God the Father in Logos was made clear to all of those in that community, which still exists today, however small, that he has called to enjoy that deep personal connection with the source and the ground of all being, or Logos itself. It's one thing to talk about this as a metaphysician. Not everybody's a metaphysician. And so the average person relates to the same order via the poetry and the artistic vision. That's the central concept. You dress up these objective universal elements in poetic images. And that is a way that these fairly complicated ideas can be communicated to the ordinary non-metaphysical person. But the dressing up of the idea isn't essential. It's something that we do to reach more people. We can make more sense out of an object, let's say like universal negation, Kali in Hinduism. This universal negation, the fact that all objects have a shadow, that death leads to new life, life leads to death, all of this that's associated with the goddess Kali. It's much easier to see her just as a statue and as a poetic element of the universal negation. The average person isn't going to look at that and begin to deduce the Logos doctrine from that notion. You dress it up in poetic and artistic form, and that is how a very complicated idea gets transmitted to simple people without really losing anything essential. In Orthodoxy, that is the very nature of the sacraments. That's what a sacrament is. St. Augustine goes so far as to say, a sacrament is any righteous act that derives from the Spirit. The sacraments are means whereby the Logos is immediately accessible to those with faith. The much older definition of faith has nothing to do with how moderns deal with it. It's like love. The ancient concept of love has no connection with our modern concept. And the same thing for faith. Faith in the tradition of the ancient church refer to an already existing relationship of the particular underneath its essence. Underneath its essence means hypostasis, to stand under. A hypostasis assumes Plato is right and that the universal is real, and it's the universal that creates the individual, not the other way around. The nominalist will say that the individual creates the universal, that the individual comes first. But that can't be, because individuals, thinking in human society, for example, are born completely helpless. It is the family, it is a tribe, it is a religion, whatever it is, that brings the child from total helplessness to the point where they become a useful citizen. You really only begin to choose things freely when you're maybe 11, 12, 13. Everything else is just pure determinism. Your individuality comes from the society and all of the ideas that went into your upbringing. And unfortunately, in our age, that has not been a positive experience for most of us. And most of us who are regional realize that we have to be in constant warfare in order to make sense out of the true fundamental unity amongst all people, and that is to be found in Logos. And Junon is a firm believer in this universal ground, the universal ground of ideas that human beings must conform to, that human beings did not create. But as I hinted at before, modern scientific society is an anomaly. There's no other society that has produced anywhere near our level of technology. And it's a real problem, because how long did the Roman Empire exist? And yet they never developed an iPod or a personal computer or an internal combustion engine. Only the much later Western civilization, French, German, Dutch, English, whatever, came up with these things. Roman Empire may have existed from the Republic all the way to the fall of Constantinople in the 15th century, having remained almost exactly the same in its technology, whether it be pagan or Christian or whatever period of time in the Roman Empire or in the Persian Empire or the Mongol Empire. Technics was not the expression of their mind. Law and justice may have been, however imperfectly, but Junon cannot find evidence of any society, no matter how literate, no matter how large, no matter how rich, that was capable of producing these billions of gadgets and circuits and everything else, and have the technology be the very center of how people come to relate to each other, just like we're doing right now over internet radio. The concept here is that Western civilization, because of the introduction of nominalist philosophy, which of course begs the question, has a scientific establishment that is incredibly wealthy and powerful, and defines itself not in the approach or in the pursuit of truth, but in the pursuit of those objects that are useful to humanity. So those, in a very brief and very simple way, are the three main elements in Junon's thought. But the central issue, in his Crisis of the Modern World, he puts out probably the best argument against nominalism and therefore in favor of realism that I've ever come across. And in fact, once you read it, and you read it carefully, are you able to really grasp the counter-revolutionary ideas that are contained. I mean, normally, when we think of just our day-to-day relations to things, we see objects, we use language to identify those objects, and we just assume that because I am an individual, those things that I'm talking about are also essentially individuals. That's the nominalist, modern, positivist scientific idea. It is false. The truth of the matter is that an individual can only come into existence because it already participates in a form or an essence far larger than itself. St. Augustine, almost all the church fathers, and René Junon say that truth must, by its very structure, be super individual. It cannot be an individual thing. It has to stand over individual things. If it does not, then it's only the creation of the human mind. If it's just the creation of the human mind, you have no way of knowing one way or the other whether it's true or false. It has to conform itself to a transcendent cause. That transcendence becomes immanent when it is clothed in matter, whether it be a plant that is green, whether it is a Christ who took a man's nature, or whatever it is. The Logos finds itself encased in matter. The matter helps to symbolize the form. The form makes the matter what it's supposed to be. This is the nature of truth. It must be above any particular object that we come across. If it is not, then it is the creation of our mind, and of course, in modern times, the creation of the scientific establishment. Reason is a problem. Reason does not posit its own ends, contrary to what Kant may have thought. Reason's purpose is to figure an intelligent and efficient way to reaching ends that can only be understood outside of science. Reason is relative because reason is related exclusively to the ends that we have chosen. And those ends, of course, cannot be scientific. Science presumes this logical structure. It uses it, but it is not the same. The logical structure of reality is something that science takes for granted, not that it deals with directly. Nominalism and naturalism are really the same thing. There is no unity. There is no overarching meaning to all of the forces in the cosmos. Utility is substituted for truth. Truth becomes a matter of expediency only. The real problem with positivism and the modern scientific mentality is that the scientific establishment alone has taken to itself not only the concept of what is true or false, but also what is real and what is not. Utility becomes the ultimate end. And usually the scientific establishment has to get their money from somewhere, the state, corporate America, university. It's often in their ends and in their interests that the scientific establishment chooses its ends and its purposes. Science is like reason. It's a tool and only a tool. It does not posit its own ends. The system, the regime, as I have used the word consistently on this show and in my writings, this tightly integrated set of institutions, religious, economic, state, media, entertainment, all of these forming a general unity to bring about the New World Order and the complete uniformity of all the peoples and cultures of the world. That is the ultimate expression of the New World Order, but that is what gives modern science its ends and its purpose. Consumer electronics, technology, the military technology and everything else, all of this derives from not science, but science being hired to figure out how we can build better engines and better rockets and better chemicals that we could use to kill people with. Nominalism knows one power, and that is money and prestige. This is what makes something true and something false. The whole concept of equality derives from the nominalist idea. In Janon's view of priesthood and royalty, he makes this extremely clear. The whole concept I've dealt with on this show, Michael Hoffman and so many others have dealt with in the past, the central Masonic ritual of the killing of the king is the birth of this kind of scientific nominalism. It's the king, not just as a monarch, but of course as many metaphorical expressions of the king, the priest, the bishop, the head of the family, the general in the army, God as father, all of these are the male king. The killing of the king ritual means that you destroy that source of unity and you substitute the will to power. The great thing about Nietzsche is that he was honest enough to say that he didn't give a damn about truth. Truth was something that the supreme create, sheer force of will. There is no truth in Nietzsche. It is pure chaos. The only hope we have of even approximating it is that the superior impose their will on this social chaos. Ultimately, Janon vehemently rejects that general point of view. You either have the realist world of logos, where truth is actual correspondence to the origin and ground of all things, or you have a scientific establishment that has its ends posited and placed upon it by their paymasters. The question is, what would science look like today if the state and corporate power, economic power, had not come to control it and fund it? Would the priorities be exactly the same? This shows that reason and science are not ends. They are methods. They're technical approaches. Ends be given by religion, logos, philosophy. The true moral ends of man within this logo system that I've dealt with. And I know this has been fairly abstract, but our purpose is to rip down all of the appearances and get to the root of what makes the system work. At least it's coherent. It may be destructive, but it's coherent. The real major issue, as you know, in most of these sort of medievalist people like me, the main concept is that science has its purpose given to it. The ends of humanity are not a scientific idea, but even more outrageous, is the idea that positivist science claims that it and it alone not only says what is true, but also what is real. And if it can't come under positivist nominalist methods in the laboratory, it does not exist. And for Janon, this is the root of the crisis of the modern age, the worship of quantity and the rejection of quality as accidental. All right, that's my show for tonight. I want to thank you guys. There's been several of you now that have donated to me. For those of you who know me, you know I hate talking about money. I hate asking for money. But I have a huge research agenda ahead of me. And essentially what I just presented as Junon's idea of logos, which is part of the Platonic tradition, is the source now of my research in patristic Greek philosophy and then a Russian and Ukrainian philosophy, all manifesting logos subordinos subunapravna, the energies of God, Rousseau's general will, all of this referring to one and the same thing. And this is my work. I think this could very well be the rest of my life in terms of the research agenda that I have. And I ask your donations because it keeps me from having to prostitute myself to a university or to a think tank or something like that. And my independence is very important. And you know, as a priest, as really a regular canon, you would call me, I do not take a tax exemption from the IRS. I pay all my taxes and really my parish and my pre-clerical status and all that. I do not claim a tax-exempt status, but this is my life's work, and I really thank all of you who have donated to me and ask humbly your continued support. Thank you, everybody. Thank you especially to all those who have donated to me. God bless, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. Time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Tuned in to Radio Ariad.